I'm Jason Wright, and this is the Texas Titans Podcast, where I sit down with peak performers from all walks of life, looking for their secrets to success. I hope you enjoy the conversation here on the Texas Titans Podcast. Hey, folks, before we get started today, I want to tell you about my favorite jeans on planet Earth, or any other planet I might be wearing jeans. That is Trinidad 3 Jeans, founded in Los Angeles, California by Marine veteran Trinidad Garcia III in 2017. Trinidad 3 Jeans has reinvented American-made denim. Trinidad's passion for fashion, denim in particular, led him to enroll in the renowned Fashion Institute of Design and Merchandising, FIDM, in Los Angeles, California. Upon completion of three separate degree curricula, he founded Trinidad 3 Jeans. As part of his determination to be socially responsible, Trinidad 3 partnered with a nonprofit veterans organization, Merging Vets and Players, MVP, which is affiliated with and supported by the brand. Folks, please go out to Trinidad3.com. That's T-R-I-N-I-D-A-D-3, the number 3.com. Check out what are old school, true denim jeans the way they were supposed to be made, and they are the official. We have an official denim of the Texas Titans podcast, and it is Trinidad 3 Jeans. Go check them out. Thanks, folks. Okay, so let me tell you how this next interview came about. It's so cool. I'm taking an online class on marketing, and all of a sudden, this incredibly energetic, bright, enthusiastic young woman comes on and just dominates the screen, and it is Rachel Miller. And I did a little bit of research on Rachel and figured out that she is from, of all places, Fort Worth. And so I thought, I have got to connect with her and get her on the Texas Titans podcast. And the more I learned, the more impressed I was. Rachel is a marketing entrepreneurial rock star, and you guys are going to love this conversation with her. And so let me read to you a little bit of Rachel's bio. Rachel Miller is the creator of Moolah, as in money, Moolah, a system helping thousands of small businesses grow on Facebook. She has personally grown engaged fan pages by some over 500,000 and over 2.2 million, fueling massive businesses. Digital Marketer has called her a Facebook guru after she helped them grow one of their pages to over a million fans. Rachel has helped 34 of her students grow engagement and reach over 10 million. That's million with an M. 10 million people with single posts on Facebook. She is the author of multiple books, one of them being a bestseller with over 100,000 copies sold. And her content has been featured on Good Morning America, in addition to other national publications and syndicated shows. As a mom of six, Rachel lives in Fort Worth, Texas. Folks, this is an incredibly fast-paced, energetic conversation with one of the most amazing entrepreneurs I've had the opportunity to visit with, Rachel Miller. Sit back and enjoy. I know you're going to love this conversation. Thanks for being here. All right, boom. Rachel, you are now. Okay, I've pushed record. So yeah, you are now, as a social media guru and expert, I want all the updates to show that you are now a Texas Titan. Congratulations.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for having me, Jason.
Well, I'm so excited. And I want to tell you that I'm excited for a host of reasons. One, because the space that you're in right now, I think that is more prevalent than ever. You know, James Altucher is one of my favorite podcasters. I mean, he's an author. He does a lot of entrepreneurs. And I listen to a lot of James's stuff. And one of the things that he's saying about right now is that we are in the middle of the great reset. You know, so many things are happening. People are I understand redefining yourself is a popular term. However, I think you almost discover, it's like rediscovery or discovering who you really are during these times. So there's a lot of that going on. And so I know your business really touches on a lot of
what people are going through in shifting from brick and mortar to online or increasing their current presence. So with that, I want you to first of all just talk about how you got started in the digital space. I want to know about this incredibly beautiful, large family of yours. You know, I mean, wow. Wow. So anyway, just tell us a little bit about you and how this journey started for you. And then also, I'm going to tell the audience a little bit about how I got to you in a minute. So, but you okay. Go first.
Yeah. So I started, I'm guessing like a lot of the people that are here, where you have a moment in your life where things happen and it feels like the rug is pulled out from underneath of you and you've landed on your bum and legs are kicking and screaming, having a fit. It's not, that's just COVID brings that to your life. Income changes bring that to your life. A boss firing you could bring that to your life. And any different things can bring that to you. For me, it was getting pregnant with my second child. So I planned my first, and then my second, I got pregnant with right away, which basically, I mean, when I say right away, like while I was still on maternity leave, I didn't think that this was possible. I should have thought that through. But anyways, I had two babies now, essentially, and I could not do staying up all night with an infant and being sick all day and teaching full time. And so I had to quit my, and then whenever I would have my second child, I wouldn't be able to afford two kids in daycare. I could barely afford one kid in infant daycare. Infant daycare is so much more expensive, and two kids in infant daycare, I would be making no money. I would be like paying to go to work. Yep. And I was like, this isn't going to work. Like we gotta wait until one's potty trained and then I don't have to childcare. And then I could have two kids. And so but that wasn't in the cards for me. That wasn't God ordained for my life, if that makes sense. So in that moment, I quit my teaching job, and it was a hard, gut-wrenching moment when I said I wasn't going back to teaching. I went home and started like doing like random things from home. And my husband's like, why don't you start a blog? Like I thought, oh, I'm going to do an MLM, or I'm going to bake cookies for my neighbor's like birthday parties. I was just trying to come up with anything to come up with money too. Oh, by the way, my car broke down. So that was another thing. And I didn't have the money to fix it because like I just lost my job. So I'm like, I got to come up with something here, just something. And so I started a website, a blog, and, I'm so grateful that I started the blog. I didn't even know what I wanted to be. I didn't even know what I was going to work towards. And I think a lot of people that are starting, they just realize that they're at the bottom and they just need to take a first step. And they may not know what that first step is, but any step is the right direction. Yes. When you're at the complete bottom, any step is going the right way. So you could make a Shopify store and it could go to pot, but you've learned something and you've taken action in the right direction. And so once I realized, once blogging was something that I had, then I started working towards a one step, another step. What do people read? What kind of things can you do for a headline to get people's attention? And little by little, that little blog, I remember the day that my blog was able to pay for my mortgage. Wow. I was over the moon excited. I was like, oh my word, I've made it. My blog can pay for my mortgage. And I laugh now because like we've paid for my mortgage in an hour now. Like, yeah. But we're in a different stage now than when we were then. And so I got to the spot. So I earned enough to pay for the mortgage, then grew it again. And we got to the spot where the blog was actually bringing about 10 million page views a month. So that means people were clicking from the internet, from social media, 10 million of them were coming to my website every month. And I was like, oh my word, this is crazy, crazy, stinking cool. And so we go from the blog to, I sold that blog, built another blog. And those all did well and they were all profitable and growing into the millions. And so then I asked people if you would like to learn how to grow what I thought everyone wanted to learn, which was profitable blogs. And they all said, no, actually, we don't care about the blogs. How'd you drive that traffic?
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, and that's when my current business has been born. And it's been a lot. My blogs are still running. I still earn multiple six figures a year off the blogs. I was sure with COVID that we were going to go into single six figure, but I think we're still going to edge out as multiple edge out. But yeah, it's, I'm sorry, there's like dishes being washed in the background. Do you want me to like close the door?
No,
or
no, okay. It's perfectly fine. It makes for some nice ambiance. And I think, so Rachel, okay, I'm giddy because for two things we have in common. One, I have my little babies that are 19 and 20 or 15 months apart. So we had twins the hard way as well. So I can relate. I've been there. I know what that's like. And so we've got that. But also what you said, so I wrote a book called Push Play, Taking Your Life Off Pause, which was when I was 28, that's when I bought my first business. And the business I bought, I had no idea. Like I bought a real estate brokerage. I'd never sold a house in my life. I just started looking for businesses. I knew I was miserable in corporate America, traveling all the time. Rylan and Abby were 2 and 3 at the time, and I wanted more time with them. So that's what I did. And I took those steps. What I love about your story that this audience needs to hear, and just so you know, this audience is an entrepreneurial audience. That's so much of what I talk about is what you just said. It's taking that first step. And Reid Hoffman, founder of LinkedIn, he said, if you don't look back at your very first endeavor with a little bit of embarrassment, then you started too late. You know, if you wait till it's perfect, I mean, that's why this podcast, I mean, like I listened to the audio from last week's show and it was terrible because one of my mics broke and it's not perfect. But I'm learning as I go. If I were to one of my closest friends, Raz Schaefer, who has a podcast, he said, look, man, he said, if you wait till you have everything perfect and you're just right, he said, you're going to be late to the show. So one, I love the fact that you just sat down and you figured out, I've got to take a step towards something. Kudos to your husband for pushing you to that. But then two, by taking that step, you opened up into something completely different. And that's what I want to share with the audience. So just so you all know, and if you can't feel the energy coming through your iPhone or however you're listening to this from Rachel, then there's something wrong with you. So I actually purchased the Knowledge Broker Blueprint, Dean Graziosi and Tony Robbins program. And all of a sudden I'm watching one day and there's this section, it's one of the modules. And there is this just, I mean, energetic girl talking about social media, telling me things about Facebook that I had no clue how to better be a better digital marketer. And it was Rachel. And so I ended up reaching out to her using exactly the methods that she taught me on how you friend someone you don't know that you want to have kind of in your business circle, your business network. She friended me back. I told Jemlyn, my wife, I was so excited. I said, oh my gosh, this actually worked. I said, she's on the class. She accepted my friend request. And then I brought you on the Texas Titan podcast to talk about entrepreneurship and some of the things you've done. So this is why, I mean, you have lived the life that I'm constantly trying to preach to this audience. You know, it's kind of that life design and taking control. And so with that, I got to tell you, it's just so on the money for what I want to tell these folks. But now let's back up a little bit. Because you said some things in there that a lot of people will hear and they'll be excited about, but tactically, the scaling, I mean, you scaled, I mean, you're getting millions of hits on a blog and how are you doing it monthly? Are you doing it weekly? How did you start to control one, the scale? And then two, how did you get that attention? How did you drive that traffic?
So that's every month we were getting 10 million a month. And actually my website right now, like I sold that blog and my other blogs, they're bringing in over 1 million page views a month as well. So 1 million to 2 is usually, so we get like 1.3 or 1.7 is where we'll end up this month, somewhere in that range. We bring it in every single month. That's a month basis. And we do it using social media. So it's almost completely organic traffic. In the sense, I might put $15 in ads a month. I might put another, maybe 1 month, I might do 50. But considering the number of people that we're driving, it's very, very, very minimal. And the amount of revenue we're bringing on, it's my ROAS is unheard of because the majority of my traffic comes organic. And so what we do is I put posts up on Facebook. I put posts up on Pinterest. I interact between Facebook and Pinterest because Facebook has a short lifespan, which means I can get a pin or I can get content to go fast, get attention quickly, but because it fizzles, I need to also balance it with a long-term content strategy. And I use my Facebook audiences primarily to drive all that traffic. So you can grow an audience. I tell everyone to start with 100 people, because if you can grow an audience of 100 people, you can grow an audience of 1,000. If you can grow an audience of 1,000, yes, there's different tactics when you get to 1,000, but you can grow an audience of 10,000. If you can grow 10,000, you can grow 100,000, 100,000, a million. So you, and every time, yes, tactics change, but you have the abilities because you're a human being who can make connections with other human beings. And I know every single one of us is met, put here on this earth to like make a difference in someone's life. So go make a difference in one person, go make a difference in 100 people and scale that. And that's essentially the tactics, is using social media as that platform to scale.
So, and then whenever you realize that, okay, you have from this, and kind of what brought us together with Knowledge Broker Blueprint, that's the whole idea. And the audience listening, again, know if you want to be an entrepreneur, don't make that just some nebulous term. You got to figure out what is your market and what is your passion and match those two. And so you figured out that while you were over here running in this lane, teaching people how to get in that lane, what I guess, did Moolah Marketing come immediately? Like, oh, wow, I'm going to start teaching people how to do what I did. And then when you decided that, what were the steps? How did you go, oh my gosh, now I'm going to completely shift to a different business of going back to your roots of teaching, but in a totally different way? What was that process like, and how did that all start?
Well, I began teaching other people after I've had my own success. So I think too many times people want to become the teacher before they've done it themselves. And frankly, that's lying to yourself, because you're thinking that you're bigger and better than you are. And it's lying to your audience, because they're going to feel scammed when they realize that you don't actually, haven't been through that. You haven't experienced it. Can somebody who's never walked a day in their life be a basketball coach? Yes, once in a blue moon, you can find someone who's never walked and can be a basketball coach. But the best basketball coaches are the ones who can show you the setup and show the land and show the dunk. They show you that they know the routine, they've been through you, they know how to wrap muscles because they've had their muscles be sore. So until you've been through it, you need to stop and say, okay, it's okay for me to have a practice business. It's okay for me to do something I don't have passion in. I don't even maybe have a lot of knowledge in, but I have a desire. I can do that instead, and that can be my practice business. And once it's successful and people want that level that I've had, then I can teach that next level. And so for me, I built, my blogs aren't necessarily ones I cared about. I told you guys about doing an MLM in a Shopify store. Well, my MLM was in essential oils. I'm one of those people who's like, I'm going to eat my chicken nuggets. Don't tell me not to eat my chicken nuggets. I'm fine. I'll take antibiotics. I'm not a health nut. Okay. I'm not the quintessential essential oil person, but what I was someone who had a friend who was essential oil, and I'm a marketer. And I'm like, girl, you got some big gaps here. And so I helped them explode their downline. So I grew a multi-level marketing 7,000 people downline, but that wasn't my passion, but it was great practice. So you can do something that's a practice business, that's not something you love, knowing the whole time I have this thing that I know I'm gifted for, but I'm gonna set those dominoes, you know, like when you hit one domino, the next one falls. I'm gonna do that now because that's the next step that's in front of me. I can't become the expert yet because I don't have this, but what I can do is take that next step that's right in front of me. And so for me, I grew a cat audience. I don't have a cat, but what I did have was a neighbor's cat that was really annoying. And I would make like little stories about this cat being really annoying in my backyard because the cat really preferred my house to her house. But I would take photos of that cat. Next thing you know, the cat went viral. I have 160,000 cat people and I'm selling cat t-shirts to them. Am I being fulfilled emotionally? No, but I do get to love cat people, serve cat people, sell them t-shirts, and build my business for what that future thing is. So it's okay to have a trial run, I think is what I would love to tell most entrepreneurs that are starting out.
Yeah. Well, and don't you think that sometimes it almost happens accidentally? I know John Acuff, who has been wildly successful, his career, of course, now he's an internationally known speaker, best-selling author, and he did a similar thing. He started writing a blog, Funny Things Christians Do, and it just exploded because there are a lot of Christians and a lot of funny things that Christians do. And so, boom, and that's how he got started. His blog was just, it was incredibly successful. So how, now take it down a little bit more to a granular level. Like if someone out there, if they have a passion for something and they're wanting to do what you do and they actually want to turn it into a business, what should they be doing right now? I mean, for example, whenever I decided I wanted to write a book, I thought I had to be a really good writer. And it kind of goes to what you're talking about. I thought I had to be a really good writer, but every author that you hear, Tim Ferriss, James Altucher, you know, Ryan Holiday, all the guys that are kind of the contemporaries right now, they say, no, just sit down and start writing. And most of what you write might be crap, but you know what? You've got to start exercising the muscle. So kind of, is that what you would say? Kind of the same thing is taking that first step.
So that would be where I would say your first step is always to build an audience. So I'm actually a two-time best-selling author. I have two books that have sold each of them over 100,000 copies.
Yep.
And I started that not by, the publisher sought me out, not because I am an author. They sought me out because I have the audience.
Right.
So collect the audience. You don't have to be an expert to collect people in a topic and just let them talk about the topic. If you let them be the center of your marketing and of your interaction, they will reflect back to you and they'll start looking up to you as an expert in time. So when you're starting out from zero, I would just start by collecting an audience of people in the niche that you want to serve. Collect them. And then if you're like an author, start writing to them. So write social media posts, write blog posts. That's a lot smaller than a big old book. When you see what people like, when you see what people click on, then go deeper in that area. And by then you've already got 1,000, 2,000 blog posts behind you. So you know how to crank it out faster. You now are the expert, but you didn't do it overnight. You did it by those baby steps.
I love it. Now, here is one of the biggest questions, especially for someone that comes up like you, kind of that, you know, again, life-changing moment, you fall into an entrepreneurial venture. Someone comes to you, they have a blog, they have 100 followers, but they need, now this is before Moolah. Now I'm pretty sure that if I show up, you know exactly what you're going to charge me. You're going to talk to me about, well, here's hourly, here's project, here's retainer. I'm sure that's pretty well formulated at this point. But I get this a lot. This is one of the hardest things because business advisory is something I do. And people love when you've done some things that are of value to them, but then they expect, because you're friends, well, you know, there's a compensation component there. And it's so, that was one of the hardest things for me, was to value my time. So let's say that someone listening right now, they realize I'm good at this. I could teach this. I could charge this. As a matter of fact, I've had friends ask me to show them how I built my Etsy store, how I built my eBay store, how I did, you know, whatever. How did you determine your value? How did you determine your pricing model, how you're going to charge by the hour, retainer? Take me through some of those early stages whenever you were getting started.
Well, my early stages of selling with Moolah are different than what my early stages were of selling physical products. So I think I'd have to find out, are they doing information products or are they doing physical products? With physical products, I went and saw what my competitors are selling their products for and either sold it for the same, and I would test selling it for the same price, selling it for less than their price, or selling it for double their price. One of my jewelry pieces that I had a jewelry line, we sold for double what my competitors were selling it for, and we sold more product because everyone assumed it was better because obviously it's twice the price. And no, it was the same exact product. Not exactly the same, but for all intents and purposes, it was the same. So for you, that's where I would start, and I would always test. For me, whenever I was doing my information products, it was what price will people pay and take action? And what's that lowest price? Because I want to make the biggest impact on the most number of people. And to make an impact, they have to actually do the work. So it has to be charged. I have to charge enough that they take action. But low enough or as low as possible so that they have all the resources they need to explode their lives and their businesses. So I started selling it, I think around $300, and people weren't opening it. They weren't asking for refunds. No, they were happy, but they weren't doing the work because they didn't put enough money in to like take action.
Right.
And so I then saw, okay, well, they're buying it, so that's good, but they're not taking action, that's bad. I raised my prices to 500. We had more people take action, but we still didn't have the results that I knew would be possible if they actually did the work. So that's when I started charging $1,000 for my program. And now everybody does the work. And now everybody gets reaction or results. Not everybody, but a lot of them do. And believe it or not, my refund rate did not go up. So I'm making a bigger impact in people's lives. I'm getting them the results that they want and they need. And that's part of, and now I can afford extra coaches to make sure they have support.
I love that. Now, because you do so many different things, and I know this is one of the things, this I'm asking personally, because I'm ADD admittedly. And I've got like my queue of projects that I have, it's always getting added to it. Books, speaking, writing, whatever. You're the same way, but you have monetized so many things and crushed it with so much success in these different lanes. At this point in your life, how do you prioritize where your attention goes and where you're going to get the greatest return? And I don't just mean monetary return. I mean, like, you know, personal fulfillment. How do you categorize and prioritize those things?
Oh, I don't know. Not very well. Because I've also got a case of squirrels.
Yeah.
Where you got to go chase the next squirrel and chase the next squirrel. I have a team that helps me. I have Farouk is my business partner, and Jaika is my EA, OBM, I don't know, whatever, the keeper of Rachel's sanity. Yep. And together they kind of help make me go on the right path.
Well, hey, I want to talk about that though, because that's one of the things that I struggled with really early in my career. Whenever I was scaling up my real estate business, I had this mindset. I need every penny that this company's making. I cannot afford to pay somebody six figures to be a COO and run the thing. I've got to have that money. Explain to the listener how important it is to realize you hanging on to all the stuff is actually a detriment to your business, because I have a beautiful, gorgeous wife that I'm madly in love with, is my best friend, is a business partner who thinks, and this is probably true, she can do everything she does better than anybody else, but because of that, she won't release any of it. So I have this conversation a lot. So what point did you realize, okay, I have to turn some of this over? And then what was that process like? Because I do know that, you know, because I've been able to work with Jaika, she is awesome, you know.
And yes,
so
she is.
I would love to have a Jaika. So tell me kind of how you went through that process.
So the first thing is, I think a lot of people actually move too quickly to hiring. So they move too quickly because they think they need an expert to do the task. And they think that they need the person in order to make more money. And yes, hiring will usually bring you in more income. But if you hire too quickly and you hire for the wrong things, you'll actually waste more money and you'll actually be farther behind. So hiring isn't like a silver bullet that fixes everything. What hiring does is it amplifies what you have. So if you haven't done the job yet and you don't know what success looks like in this role, you shouldn't hire for that role, because you will hire the wrong person who will put you farther back or fleece you, and you won't even know that it's happening. So I always say that you, especially when you're a small company, you have to do the job first, and then you can hire someone else. Once you have, here's the process, do this, then this, then this, here's where things go. Once you have that, then you're setting yourself up for success when you hire someone new to come into your business. And then that person can then do their job and then hire the next person if need be. But you want to always make sure that you understand the roles that you're bringing someone onto so that you can give them the best chance of success. And I think my biggest failure in all my years of business has been hiring too soon and hiring without understanding what they're going to be doing. So whenever I'm looking at my day, I'm like, oh my word, I have so much on my day. The first thing that I do, I got this tip from Alex Sharfin, and actually from Trey Llewellyn too. Both of them told me to do this. outline your entire day. Every 15 minutes, what are you doing every 15 minutes or even every 10 minutes, whatever it is, write down everything you're doing and then see, look at your life and say, what things can I automate? Now, even before you hire someone else, what things in here can I batch together and do all at once? Because if I do them all at once, I'll be faster at it. So I can create all my photos for my book at one time. So I'll have all I'll do all my outline of what the book is. I'll go now and I'll buy all the stuff from the Dollar Tree and whatever and Target so that I can have my books props. And then I bring in my kids. And this is how I wrote my two books. In two, three days time, we took all of the photos for the book. The book is a cookbook. So every page there's like three photos on it and they're three different photos. And then it's a 140 page book. So that was a lot of different photos. How can I do that if I waited and did one at a time? Well, that would take forever. Mm-hmm. And so what could I do that I could get my entire book written, completed, ready to go to the publisher in under 2 weeks time? I did it because in 3 days we took all the photos at one spot. Mm-hmm. And then after that, well, then I look at the thing. Okay, how can I batch writing my book? I can batch it by looking at the photo. While I'm looking at the photo, turn on my app that does transcription and describe the photo and the steps to do it. Now I've got the book at least outlined and written because I looked at the photos and it wrote it for me. Now it's a lot faster. So there's going to be easier ways, but you're not going to see those if you don't outline everything you do in a day, because you're going to naturally chase your squirrel and stop what you're doing and go make a email and then stop what you're doing and go fix a sales page and stop what you're doing and then go to have a client call. And that's not effective with your time.
I could not agree more. That's one of the things that was so tough for me for so long. And still I get caught in it, is that if you're like you and I, where we do, you know, we constantly want to chase the squirrels, then you look up at the end of the day and go, what in the world did I do? But if I put it in a schedule and I give myself, like you said, the 15 minute block, because my biggest problem is that when I'm working on one thing, I have this anxiety that I should be working on one of the other three, four, five things. And then I start working on that thing and I should be working on one of the others. But there's something mentally about if you just say, okay, this is only 15 minutes. I'm going to devote 15 minutes to this. Anything can wait for 15 minutes. And then you have that, you can make the executive decision at minute 15. Okay, do I want to go ahead and add another 15 minute block to this project because I'm in flow, it's working, this is the most productive use of my time. That was so hard for me to get. So I'm glad to hear, I'm glad to hear you say that that's how you've conquered it. And I need to get better at it. That's the bottom line. But okay, but you also bring me into one of my favorite subjects. I love to understand people's routines, how they manage themselves. I mean, you know, everything from your health and wellness, you know, how you're staying sharp mentally, you know, and you've got kiddos that you're taking care of. And by the way, I mean, right now is a weird time trying, you know, we have a children's store. And so we see a lot of moms that were homeschool parents for the first time ever. And now their kids are going back to school during a pandemic. It's just been a really weird time. So take me through the day of being an entrepreneur, an executive, just someone who is just doing so, and a mom and a wife. You've got so many things on your plate. How do you keep your sanity? How do you manage all that? And then also talk about how do you keep that
Sandy's been long gone, man. Yeah, I'm with you. Gone. That ship sailed.
Yeah, I understand. But talk to us about some of that.
Okay. Yeah. So I get up in the morning, I feed my kids breakfast. I right now, because we are bringing on two new team members. So this last week and this week, I spend my first half hour, 45 minutes with the new team person where I go over what their tasks are and we do their onboarding. So I'm doing one team person this week and next week. And then the next 2 weeks after that, I've got another team person that we're starting. So this whole month, my routine starts with training my team. And then I go into meetings. I try to have my meetings between 9 and noon. And then afternoon, I do filming, usually filming or course content creation from noon until when the kids get home from school. Kids get home from school. At that point, I sometimes hop into my communities and I chit chat with them if I'm making sure the kids are doing something or not doing something, or I talk to the kids. And then around 7 o'clock, I get back up to work. And that's where I like wrap things up, or I like work on a project I think is fun. And I work from like 7 to 9 usually again.
Okay. Okay. Now, and I don't know, and there might be some disclosure reasons you can't talk about this, or maybe you can. So like I said, I found out about you through the Knowledge Broker Blueprint. So my gosh, you're sharing a virtual stage, if you will, with two of the largest names in personal coaching, success, and Tony Robbins, for crying out loud. I mean, Rachel, I was like 13 or 14 watching Tony Robbins' old infomercials and had no idea why, but man, the guy captivated me late at night with Fran Tarkenton, you know, back in the day. And so I followed Tony throughout his career, then Dean Graziosi. And so anyway, now you become a part of their most recent program. And disclaimer, I'm in no way associated other than a customer, but my gosh, I mean, you're on one of the biggest stages of, you know, masterminds and content creation in the world. How in the world did that happen? Were you just so awesome that Tony Robbins noticed, or Dean Graziosi noticed? How did that happen?
I'm beyond grateful for them, and I'm grateful to have learned from them as well. Everyone needs a mentor. And when you have a mentor who can point you in the right direction, you get there faster because you get to learn their own speed bumps and the things that they come across that were barriers for them to taking action. And that's why I'm so grateful for Dean and for Tony, for the lessons that they've taught me. How did I get involved? Basically, I had two mentors, and those two mentors told them what they've learned from me. And like, I've learned from my mentors, and they have learned from me as well. So it's a little bit of a symbiotic relationship, but mostly I'm the learning stage, just so that you guys know, with my mentors. But my mentors told them about how they had learned from me some audience tips. And next thing you know, they flew me to Arizona, and I filmed a little series, and the rest
and
is
crushed
history.
It.
I'm very grateful for that opportunity.
And crushed it. I mean, seriously, it's one of my favorite sections of the entire program. I mean, you really did. And that's something that too, I'm so glad you brought up, because I know I am someone who, same thing, even at 45, I still consider myself on the learner aspect. As a matter of fact, I had the first mentee call me a mentor, and I'm like, I'm not old enough to be a mentor, but I guess I am. And I don't feel like, because I do feel like I'm constantly learning. But I know throughout the course of my life, having those mentors that have surrounded me has been one of the greatest benefits, not only to better me and to pour into me and my knowledge, but when I started this podcast, one of the reasons why I've had New York Times bestsellers, Congressional Medal of Honor winners, CEOs, people that have done amazing things, is because I've had mentors that have spoken up and made that phone call for me and said, hey, you're going to get an email from this guy with this podcast. I know you've probably never even been on a podcast, but you should talk to Jason. And it has been so beneficial to me. So, you know, I'm glad you bring that up. But also take it a step further for those who are kind of reaching that point where they want to broaden their network in a way that's not just that superficial friendship, but truly gain and then give back. Talk to the audience about your steps for doing it and maintaining that friendship and that mentor-mentee relationship.
Yeah, I like to use 100 people. Because we can interact with 100 people, remember their names, or at least recognize their names, recognize something about them. So I like to have a circle of 100, and we all can collect 100 people. We can collect 100 people that we interact with. And the easiest way to find who those perfect people are, I want them all to be in the same niche. So it's not like you want your Aunt Cindy and your second cousin who drives Harleys for the weekends. They don't have a whole lot in common, right? So you want to pick one type of person and collect 100 people in that niche and then have in-depth conversations with them. And I'd start with a sifting question. I go to the places are you a, raise your hand if you're also a mom of six kids, because I know there's not too many of us. Where are the rest of you at?
Right.
That's literally the words I'm saying. So I'm not saying something that's formal, because formal makes them feel like, oh, you're going to sell something to me. What are you trying to sell to this mom of six kids? Instead, I say, where are all the other six moms of six kids at? I know I'm not the only one with a half dozen. Next thing you know, oh, I'm not, but so-and-so is. And they're tagging people for me, and they're growing my network without me having to literally do the work myself. So sifting question helps your friends who already know people who are perfect for your niche, the perfect person for you, helps them find those people for you. So sifting question, after the sifting question, I reply back and forth, because it's not, you don't want to jump right into, great, you're my perfect person, come sign up for my program. No, you want to have a dialogue with them, because they don't know who you are yet. Or even if they know who you are, they don't necessarily see you as the expert in that space yet. So have a dialogue back and forth. After that, I put them into a friend list. And in that friend list, I go into that list and I cheerlead them on, because I want to be in that group and where they see me interacting with them. So I cheer on people inside that list. So they see me not just interacting with them on my turf, but me interacting on their space as well and cheering them on. And then after that, I message them back and forth, and eventually we bring it into a friend relationship. When it's a friend, then I put them on an interest list. From an interest list, I can retarget them. From retargeting them, I drive them to a page, a group, and the rest is history. And that's how we get millions of people to stuff.
And then again, I want to go back to, because everything you said sounds so scientific, so formulaic, but you just kind of, you figured this out. I know you've done training, obviously you're a learner, but you have also, but you put yourself into positions for self-education. No, I mean, a lot of this is trial and error. You figured those things out just by doing, by saying go and figuring it out. Correct?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing that I want, again, this audience to understand. There's so many barriers that we put in our mind of things that we can and cannot do that don't exist. I always describe it. It's like that elephant. When they're a baby, they tie, you know, the elephant to the stake. And then when it's this huge giant elephant that could pop the stake at any point, no, they still stay there because they don't think they can move when in fact they can. And so I think it's incredible that you've taken not only the initiative to become such a world-class entrepreneur, but yet you can sit there and describe the formula. So, okay, so with that, now let's say that I'm a small business owner, be it service, product, I've got a Shopify, whatever the case may be. And I come to Moolah Marketing. What do you tell me? What are you going to do for me? How do I engage you? And what does that look like? Who needs Moolah Marketing?
Any person or business that's trying to grow attention to their cause or to their products. So we've helped governors of two different states win their elections. We've helped TV celebrities who've had drama that they wanted the world to forget about drive attention to something else. We've helped a realtor. I have a wall of wins here. You guys can't see me necessarily if you're on a podcast, but I've got this wall of like, 100 and something people's faces that I've got in front of me. And one of them is a realtor who moved from California to rural Appalachia. Wow. Stood out like a sore thumb. Nobody wanted to buy anything from him. They all hated the new guy because they'd all been there for generations of families. What's this guy doing trying to sell houses to me?
Right.
And we were able to pivot his brand and bailed him not only into the biggest brokerage in his county, but also have him begin a whole separate industry. Revolutionized his area. But that happened because he built an audience and had to attract that audience and love that audience. So the same tactics that I would tell a TV person who's got a TV producer with 14 different shows is the same tactics that I would teach Greg, who's becoming a realtor, real estate brokerage in Lake Laura, North Carolina. And the tactics are essentially, you got to speak for your audience first. If it's all about you, your audience is going to be pushed away. Speak for your audience first. And I teach that inside a course, and I use that strategy to blow people up on social media, mostly using Facebook, but the same tactics you work on all social media platforms. So the tactics can grow a blog, they can grow a Pinterest audience, they can grow YouTube. I teach it with Facebook just because that's the most comfortable for most people, but the overarching philosophy behind it, you can use anywhere. And it's a 6-week program, and it's pretty stinking cool.
I love it. I love it. Now, let me ask you this. So let's say that there's someone listening that they have been practicing law for years and years. They're 55, 60 years old. And they're like, I'm burnt out. I've got plenty of money, but I still want to stay sharp. So I want to start teaching, but I've never taught. I've just practiced litigation or whatever the case may be, transactional law for years and years and years. Writing curriculum, that's not an easy task. You know, actually, I think, as a matter of fact, I think getting in, again, going back to my beautiful, sweet, precious princess of a wife, she keeps a lot of institutional knowledge in her head, and she gets frustrated when others can't perform. I'm like, well, sweetheart, they don't know what you know. You have to be able to articulate that and teach them. And that's something that you've mastered. Yes, you were a teacher, you know, before. Now you're actually writing courses on something completely different. So how have you broken it down to figure out what people need to know and how they're going to absorb the information in a way that they can actually execute on what you're teaching. Because I got to think curriculum development is, it scares the heck out of me. I want to do some of it. I mean, hey, I mean, that's how I found you, right? The class I'm taking, there's some things I want to do. How do you do that?
My best tip for curriculum development is build your audience first and then offer it to your audience. See if they take it. If they don't take it, well, you know, everybody buys something. You need to work on your offer. Once they take that offer and they buy it, now you need to get them results. Well, as you're working on breaking down the steps for them, watch and see where they have hangups, where they get glitches, where they don't get the result that you think that they should. Go in deep on that section and say, okay, what can we do to break this area down? And constantly be listening to your audience. So we're actually in the process right now of refilming my course. And we're gonna be relaunching it in like October or something like October. It's the internal one, so it's not our big launch, but because I want a small number of people to take it in the new version so I can watch what they do, see where their hangups are and fix those parts. That's what, if you're listening and you let your content, whether your content is TV shows you want the whole world to see, or whether your content is a course you want people to get results, it all comes back to your audience. If you grow your audience, if you build your audience up, your audience will literally create your content for you because they're going to have questions. And as they ask those questions, they'll realize, okay, I have to put this part in here and this part in here. And then it becomes a well-tuned machine.
I love it. So, all right. One of the things that I have developed over the last, we were talking about mentors earlier. One of the things that I've tried to develop over the last, probably 5 to 6 years for sure, is kind of a virtual mentor group. And so I'd like to know just someone who, again, very like-minded in the space that, you know, that I'm kind of moving into. Who are the people that you look at right now that if they put out a book tomorrow, you're going to grab it? If they have a tactic that have taught you a tactic, a hack, or a habit that you've deployed in your life, and it's like, I would never not do that for the rest of my life. Who are those people that you found that you're constantly watching what they do and learning from?
Dean Graziosi, easy peasy.
Okay.
He's by far one of the most, he's in tune with the market. He loves people. He cares deeply. Dean's one that I would strongly suggest everyone stop what you're doing and go follow Dean Graziosi for sure. I also love and adore Stu McLaren, and he's interacted with Dean. I think I've met them at the same events. And then inside that same circle, there's Jenna Kutchner and Pete Fargus. So there's a lot of different mentors that you can find. The secret though is sticking with one mentor, or sticking with maybe one or two, maybe max three. Don't go to every source because you're going to muddy the waters, in the sense you're going to confuse yourself. So I actually have a student right now who took my program and then took somebody else's program and is now confused, and she's not selling as well. And she's like, well, what did I do wrong? And I'm like, well, you mixed the programs in a way that now your audience is really confused. You're confused, your audience is confused. So I would suggest sticking with, say, one or two people for like 18 months until you like master that realm, and then move on to the next mentor. But yeah, so pick one or two. I would definitely start with Dean and Tony's course for sure.
Okay. And then as far as reading, and this doesn't have to just be books. I mean, one of the things that I have taken for granted until recently, like you mentioned, kind of where you made your first big splash, I'm reading blogs now. I never read blogs before. It's great, quick content. And it doesn't take as much time as having to sit down and read a whole book. Now, I do try to read at least a book a week, but nevertheless, and newsletters, I've realized there is some very content-rich newsletters to gain information. What about you? Are there any books that you would recommend to the audience, or blogs or newsletters that you're like going to at least click on and scan on a weekly basis to kind of keep sharp?
I love, my latest fun book is The Whale Vomit Method, and it's all about copywriting by Kevin Dabrowski. I love that book. I'm reading A Napkin Away, and I'm trying to remember the name of the author right now, but the author's skipping me. But that's more about how to organize your thoughts into a framework. I'm using it actually to teach my course better. One Napkin Away is basically how to doodle, but okay. Doodle in a way that can organize your brain. And I think that's fascinating. Those would be two that I'm reading right now.
Okay. And what was it? The whale one?
The whale vomit method.
I love that. You think I would be able to remember that? Okay. I'm going to put this in the show notes, and also I'll probably grab them too to pick up. And then what about your books? I want you to talk about your
books. My books are there for in the kids space, parenting space. Yep. The point, they were more of a, this is how I built my audience. They're not going to help you build an audience. They're going to help you entertain your kids. My first audience that I built was Quirky Mama, and it served preschool parents. And so in that audience, I built, wrote two books and then sold that business, moved on to the DIY home space where I began helping people with like fixing their garbage disposal, getting rid of fleas, yada, 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 going on a beach vacation, the checklist you'd need. Basically, it's a how to hack your life as a parent in a home. And then from there, I went on to build a cat audience, a Shopify store, an MLM. And then I realized I'm like doing all of the little things and I'm still not feeling like fulfilled in my business. So I asked my, I had a Crock-Pot audience and I was selling like Crock-Pot liners to them. So I asked my mentor, like, help me make a meal plan for them. And he's like, girl, you don't eat your vegetables. Like, I'm eating vegetables now, but at the time I really had an aversion to anything green. He's like, so like, you're going to do a cooking show and a cooking site? Like you have no, this isn't really your calling in life. And I was like, yeah, but I have a lot of people. I have like 180,000 people that are asking me for meal plans and I love them and I'm going to serve them and I'm going to give them a meal plan because they want to buy a meal plan from me. So let's go make some bank and make them a meal plan. He's like, your real gift is not making meal plans. Your gift is that you built another audience, like in your, you did another one. Like, what'd you do that for? You don't even eat from a crock pot. You don't eat anything that's not takeout. What's wrong with you? So, that's when I realized, okay, people actually want to learn how to build an audience. I just thought it was a gift, but that's, I don't know where I got on that rabbit trail. But my books, the point in my books, they're 101 kids science activities and 101 kids activities that are the bestest ever. Yeah. They're kids books.
Okay. Well, I need your publisher, how I can buy them wholesale, because we will have them in Hot Tots. We have and I'm going to toot my wife's horn. This is all her doing. I mean, we have the premier children's store in all of East Texas for sure. We actually have a lot of shoppers that come out of Fort Worth, San Antonio, from all over the state. And I am affectionately known as her intern. So it's crazy. She will run from the camera. She doesn't want to have anything to do with being on social media, but you know, we sell a lot through Instagram and I made her redo the website and I don't make her do anything, but I highly encouraged, and she was kicking and screaming, updated the website. We're still working on that. But the Hot Tots intern has become a thing. I mean, it's crazy. Nice. It's like I was in New York on a plane coming back from market. I'm sick as a dog and I'm sitting with my head down and this lady gets on the plane, Rachel, I kid you not. And she looks, she goes, you're the Hot Tots intern. And,
nice.
And Jim Lynn looks at me and goes, you've got to be kidding me. She said, do y'all live in Tyler? And she said, no, we live actually in Henderson and we've never been in your store, but we follow you on social media. So I want to do a collaboration with your books. We'll do something with the Hot Tots intern. I've got a lot of content that I want to create that I would probably need to engage you on, like I mentioned offline in an email. But I definitely want to get your books in our store. So
awesome. Yeah. We do have kids book 101 kids, bestest kids activities, and the other one is 101 simple science experiments.
I love it. Now, okay, I can't let you go without asking this question, and usually this would happen way before, but I knew I had so much tactical information to give to this audience from you. I just knew it was going to go like this, but I got to go all the way back in the chronological order of things and go, where did this come from? Where is this entrepreneurial DNA that you are crushing on such a on such a high level? Where did it come from? And when did it start? Was it before?
I didn't think I was an entrepreneur, but I was born into a family of entrepreneurs. So that does help. But when I was growing up, I was always like, I'm not going to be the business person. You guys all like talk, live and breathe your businesses. I'm going to have a 9-to-5, then I'm going to work, and then we're going to come home and I'm going to do diddly squat. Yeah. So I was always jealous of my friends' parents that they would just like, and then I became an entrepreneur. But yeah, it might be something that was like in the water when I was a kid. But yeah, my father, my grandfather's on both sides, my grandfather's fathers, my grandmother's, their mothers, like it goes all the way back on all the sides. All my aunts and uncles, except for like one, are, entrepreneurs. And I think the one that isn't is like the vice president of Bank of America. So he pretty much is an entrepreneur as well. He just went the corporate route of entrepreneurship. Yeah. But yeah, no, they all have successful large businesses. And it was actually really funny because when I first started my blogs, my family and my husband's family, they would be like, "So can you come over on Friday?" I'm like, "No, because I got to work." They're like, "Right, because you do a blog." They have like a warehouse that's got like 4,000 SKUs. So in their mind, I got this little hobby thing and I got my kids. I can totally take off Friday morning, please.
Yeah.
And then it wasn't until I actually was on Good Morning America that they're like, "Oh, she actually works."
No. I love that. That's exactly what so many people don't realize. And right now, that's why I thought this is the perfect time. I mean, you know, it can be done. If you're trying to look for to draw a blueprint for life, it can be done. And you have done that and probably making more money than a lot of people that are, you know, slugging away that 9 to 5, right?
I might be making more than my brother with this warehouse. Just saying.
Yeah, right.
I don't rub his nose in it. No, okay, guys, it's sibling thing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Well, okay. So again, because so much of my podcast is about business, entrepreneurs, those who want to be entrepreneurs, just however you want to do it, someone out there right now, they are looking to get started and they mm-hmm. bought in, they've listened to this podcast, they go, "Okay, I just got to take that first step," whatever that may be for them. But then give them just kind of like a little bit of a, okay, here's a disclaimer, here's what to be ready for, and here's what you need to do before they get started.
Well, you're going to have to work for free for a while. A long while.
Amen.
And you're going to have to do a business that's going to fail. And maybe two, maybe three. And you're going to go feel like you're going backwards for a while. I know for my first businesses, they weren't the thing that I was called to do. They weren't the thing that made me excited. They weren't the thing that lit me up, but I learned lessons from them. And so I see a lot of people who want to jump right to the end and want to jump to where they're the expert and where they have this thing. Maybe they have to start with what does their audience want first? And then how can I love and serve to that audience at that level? And then it's okay if I make a mistake. It's okay if I even change my mind and try something new. I've learned amazing lessons that I can use to build up the next platform and build the next thing. And that would be my number one tip for an entrepreneur is to don't be afraid to start where you are.
Excellent. All excellent advice. And yeah, the working for free thing, it's like I talk to a lot of people on here that are entrepreneurs and they go, and you know, like when I was in business school, I had some classmates that were there because they wanted to get out of the corporate rat race and become an entrepreneur. And the thought of being an entrepreneur is always romantic. And especially right now with Gary Vaynerchuk and, you know, guys like that. And, you know, people that listen to Tony, you see that and you go, "Oh yeah, that's just a sexy lifestyle. I want that." But when you don't get that paycheck, and it's okay to figure out too, and this one I always give this audience the grace to say, "Hey, if you figure out one day that you are not an entrepreneur, there's just the idea of it, that's okay. We need people that are going to be on staff to, you know, be there to help us through what we're doing, whatever the case may be." But you're right. I remember I had a would-be business partner one time that started wanting to charge our little shell of a startup a kind of a consulting fee. And my other partner and I, who had done this, you know, multiple times before, were like, "Wait, that's not how it works, bud. You know, you've got to love this and believe in it so much, you're willing to do it for free. That's kind of the point." So, great advice. Yeah.
Thank you so much for having me today.
Rachel, this has been amazing. Thank you for your time. I'm going to be back in touch with you. I want to get your books. I want to get, probably need to engage you, need to take your course with Jemlyn and I. So anyway, thanks for making this time. You're a rock star.
I appreciate today, Jason. Have a good one.
All right, you too. Well, that's a wrap on another episode of the Texas Titans podcast. Thank you so much for being here. This has been a Texas Titans Media production. If you will, please take the time to go out to iTunes and give us that ever coveted 5-star rating. It would mean the world to me. Plus, go to jasonrightnow.com, sign up for the Vitruvian Letter, and most importantly, have an incredible rest of your day and week. Thanks for being here.